The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm a nightclub at the end of the world. It's Sunday, November 27th, 2011, the Sunday after Thanksgiving. This is going to be a different show tonight. I feel especially motivated to give you the most thorough briefing I can on the situation, on these multiple situations around the world tonight, with a deep sense of urgency. And I want to start off by dedicating the show tonight and acknowledging everybody, all the volunteers and all the staff at CollapseNet who have been working so long and so hard to do what we've been doing for you all this time. It's a special night, I think, for us to remember and thank them. Three names come to mind who have been just amazing of late. That's Carl Hartung, Luis Mora, and Darren Abulafia, who's our great video editor. There's so many out there, but I just want to thank all of them and acknowledge them tonight before we go into that. Okay, so I've developed a kind of a theme for tonight's show because truly, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, old friends, this is a very special dark night. This is a major transition that's here. So I want to set a little theme up front, just to read you some headlines or just some things that have happened over the last few days. Britain has activated emergency plans to get its citizens out of Europe in the event of civil unrest over the euro collapse. We've had two stories on that on the World News Desk this week, and this is no joke. Here's another headline that will be on the World News Desk tomorrow. The Eurozone has 10 days at most. That's from Business Insider today. We'll have it along with our usual great take of events around the world on the World News Desk in the morning. And from tomorrow's Telegraph, Iran expels Britain's ambassador to Tehran, calling death to England. And from UPI today, Saudi tank drives into protesters. Haven't seen that yet at an Occupy encampment. Tant qu'on ne change pas la manière dont l'argent fonctionne, on changera rien. I want to make, as I lead you through this briefing tonight, my friends, I want to make a start off by making an amend to Naomi Wolf. It was a few weeks ago, maybe a month, who knows now. Each week seems like a year. That I made some unfavorable comments about an article on her arrest in New York City, in that it looked staged, and I really need to make an amends for those, for saying that. I was influenced by an association made in the story with Amy Goodman, and I think I was extremely unfair to a woman who has written an amazing article. And I'm going to read you some quotes from that. She had to get it published at The Guardian in Great Britain, but we ran this on the World News Desk today. And what she writes here meshes absolutely perfectly with my own analysis. The shocking truth about the crackdown on Occupy. The violent police assaults across the U.S. are no coincidence. Occupy has touched the third rail of our political class's venality. But just when Americans thought we had the picture, these will be in segments, was this crazy police and mayoral overkill on a municipal level in many different cities. The picture darkened. The National Union of Journalists and the Committee to Protect Journalists issued a Freedom of Information Act request to investigate possible federal involvement with law enforcement practices that appeared to target journalists. The New York Times reported that, quote, New York cops have arrested, punched, whacked, shoved to the ground, and tossed a barrier at reporters and photographers covering protests. Reporters were asked by NYPD to raise their hands to prove they had credentials. When many dutifully did so, they were taken, upon threat of arrest, away from the story they were covering and penned far from the site in which the news was unfolding. Other reporters wearing press passes were arrested and roughed up by cops after being falsely informed by police that, quote, it is illegal to take pictures on the sidewalk. In New York, a state Supreme Court justice and a New York City council member were beaten up. In Berkeley, California, one of our greatest national poets, Robert Haas, was beaten with batons. The picture darkened still further when Wonkette and WashingtonBlog.com reported that the mayor of Oakland acknowledged that the Department of Homeland Security had participated in an 18-city mayor conference call advising mayors on, quote, how to suppress Occupy protests. To Europeans, the enormity of this breach may not be obvious at first. Our system of government prohibits the creation of a federalized police force and forbids federal or militarized involvement in municipal peacekeeping. As the puzzle pieces fit together, they began to show coordination against OWS at the highest national levels. In other words, for the DHS to be on call with mayors, the logic of its chain of command and accountability implies that congressional overseers, with the blessing of the White House, told the DHS to authorize mayors to order their police forces pumped up with millions of dollars of hardware and training from the DHS to make war on peaceful citizens. So when you connect the dots properly understood, what happened this week is the first battle in a civil war in which, for now, only one side is choosing violence. Let that sink in. If you've been reading me on CollapseNet this week, and as things have evolved, sometimes bizarrely, you've seen that I'm drawing exactly the same picture, which I did way back at From the Wilderness when I wrote the F word about the Patriot Act and realized that DHS and the government were going to get, through communications technology, through computer technology, through laws and so-called assistant programs, into the very fiber of local law enforcement everywhere, and they would attempt to take it over and own it. And that truly appears to be exactly what's happening now, because police departments find themselves unable to function as well without federal assistance, so they have been doing the bidding. But the litany of what happened this week is pretty staggering. Habeas corpus is to disappear. Now, for those of you who don't know habeas corpus, that is a fundamental mandate established way back with, I think, with the Magna Carta, that you cannot lock someone up in jail without charging them with a crime indefinitely or for any long period of time. You just can't throw people in jail. But now, from the ACLU this week, we will have this on the World News Desk. It's on the World News Desk tonight at CollapseNet. Senators demand the military lock up American citizens in a, quote, battlefield they define as being right outside your window. Now listen to this. The Senate is going to vote on whether Congress will give the president and every future president the power to order the military to pick up and imprison without charge or trial civilians anywhere in the world. Even Representative Ron Paul, Texas, raised his concerns about the NDAA detention provisions during last night's Republican debate. The power is so broad that even U.S. citizens could be swept up by the military, and the military could be used far from any battlefield, even within the United States itself. The worldwide indefinite detention without charge or trial provision is in the bill S-1867, the National Defense Authorization Act bill, which will be on the Senate floor on Monday morning. The bill was drafted in secret by Senators Carl Levin and John McCain and passed at a closed-door committee meeting without even a single hearing. But there is a way to stop this dangerous legislation. Senator Mark Udall, I've met a few Udalls and I've liked them. A Democrat of Colorado is offering the Udall Amendment that will delete the harmful provisions and replace them with a requirement for an orderly congressional review of detention power. The Udall Amendment will make sure that the bill matches up with American values. The author wrote, I have to be honest, this is me. I have to tell you that I believe the time is long past when Americans could actually influence legislation, especially an act being railroaded like this one is. No one stopped the Patriot Act, and the powers that be cannot help but get aggressively more repressive. They have to now. If they stop, they lose everything anyway. And the time is near when we may look back on the Occupy movement days with nostalgia, but I think events may be passing Occupy by, but we have yet to see how it might emerge in the rapids that are coming. Emerge, reemerge, or evolve, but the initial era of Occupy is definitely over. The eras of collapse are proceeding now with greater and greater speed, and the finality as we change from each reality, from each shorter period in the quickening, is more pronounced. One of the things that the Occupy movement was doing was establishing strong bridges between active and former military personnel, honorable police officers, and the rest of us. That was one of Occupy's biggest threats. It still is. And Occupy accomplished something magnificent, and it will bear fruit. I just don't know when. But we created a safe, the movement created a safe space for a while, but I have to say it's not because of the movement's failure, it's just because of the tidal wave of events taking place that we have to take that and run with it and be grateful for what came from it and hope that something still evolves. But the truth of the matter is that as these things are unfolding in front of us, the United States Constitution is null and void. It doesn't exist. The Magna Carta, null and void, doesn't exist. What these two documents establish is that it can never be illegal to enact the law allowing this. In other words, here we are. As George Orwell wrote, those that rule do so by the use of fraud and force. When the fraud is discovered, all that remains is force. Chris Hedges, I put that in a great essay not too long ago. Glad to see all these people coming up, stepping up with some great insights. Naomi Wolf, thank you. And again, my apologies for thinking anything bad about you. I'm human, but I make amends. So it seems time now, I think, to take a musical break. And this is a song I had set up for this song for this show tonight. If you haven't heard McConaughey, and if you haven't heard him singing We Are the Many, this is a good time to do so. But I have to tell you, in light of the things we still have to go through that are unfolding in front of us right now, trying to prepare you guys for what's coming next week, I may hear this song differently tonight. It's called We Are the Many.
Ye come here, gather round the stage. The time has come for us to voice our rage against the ones who've trapped us in a cage to steal from us the value of our wage from underneath the vestiture of law. The lobbyists at Washington do gnaw at liberty, the bureaucrats guffaw. And until they are purged, we won't withdraw. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. Our nation was built upon the rights of every person to improve their plight. But the laws of this republic they rewrite. And now a few own everything in sight. They own it free of liability. They own that they are not like you and me. Their influence dictates legality. And until they are stopped, we are not free. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You enforce your monopolies with guns, while sacrificing our daughters and sons. But certain things belong to everyone. Your thievery has left the people none. So take heed of our notice to redress. We have little to lose, we must confess. Your empty words do leave us unimpressed. A growing number join us in protest. We occupy the streets, we occupy the courts, we occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. You can't divide us into sides, and from our gaze you cannot hide. Denial serves to amplify, and our allegiance you can't buy. Our government is not for sale. The banks do not deserve a bail. We will not reward those who fail. We will not move till we prevail. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. We are the many, you are the few.
In just a little over 5.5 hours, the Los Angeles Police Department will move to evict Occupy LA. It's one of the most stunning betrayals I think I've ever seen, and it doesn't fall at the feet of the Los Angeles Police Department. It falls at the feet of Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. They had an agreement for a 72-hour eviction notice. That was not observed, and the city had offered Occupy Los Angeles 10,000 square feet of office space plus farmland to farm, to start doing the things that we need to do to start feeding people who are going to be very hungry very soon. The city reneged on all of those promises, violating everything, and in a very charged press conference that was handled beautifully. We have that on the website. You can find that on the Occupy LA website. The LA occupiers, I think, rightly under the circumstances, said, hell no, we won't go. I had been overjoyed just a couple of days ago to see what I thought was some amazing work by National Lawyers Guild member Jim Lafferty, who I know, I've known since I confronted John Deutsch at Locke High School, and Chief Charlie Beck. I met his dad a couple of times way back in the day of the Hillside Strangler at LAPD, work in really good faith to negotiate an agreement that was when the city was going to live up to its end of the bargain, in which L.A. said, we will not arrest and give you an opportunity to stand up and submit to arrest. And if you don't, then you will be charged with resisting, but our officers will carry you. And I was proud. I was extremely proud. But there is obviously another agenda being placed. I can only imagine Jim Lafferty's anger, and I can only imagine the occupiers. Elected officials now make promises lying as glibly as Adolf Hitler did in 1938 and 39. I mean, I saw that at Santa Rosa. I couldn't understand that they reneged on their, you know, we had this great moment of relief, just like played in L.A., and then the city changed everything. So all I can do now is sit back and say to the occupiers, I understand any path you guys take here now. We have all labored hard to wear a mantle of nonviolence, and that is our power. I pray that stays intact, and I'm really in solidarity tonight with everybody in L.A. Okay. These developments, what's going on now in Occupy, is consistent with what I see as the passing of the all-too-brief period when social protest in a functioning society could possibly change the overall course of events, known as collapse. This next week is going to birth a complete new paradigm in collapse for all of us. And what I'm doing tonight is I'm trying to get you ready for what's coming this next week. We cannot approach what's coming now with any assumptions about how things might function based on the last 3 months of the occupation or the last 3 months of economic functioning or social functioning. A mass general strike, a real one, I mean the way it's done, is set for Britain this week. It'll happen this week. It'll dwarf Occupy London. Europeans do general strikes. Oakland was nothing. The British government is on widespread alert. Troops have been called out. We're talking people who run the trains don't show up. We're talking people who deliver mail, who pick up trash. We're talking about a strike that shuts things down. The troops have been put on alert, and Britain is extremely concerned about how that might unfold. And here I look at the size of a general strike, which may involve hundreds of thousands of people, and here's this little sea called Occupy London and London Stock Exchange in the middle of it. And the spirit's going to have to reveal why you were placed there, my brothers and sisters, but hold the light high, hold the light high. Occupy has always been a long shot, but I still am totally convinced that it has accomplished some miracles, and we have not seen all the fruit of those miracles yet. But the playing field is about to change in ways that Occupy will be hard-pressed to stay in front of. Indeed, I think we all will. It might be a completely different world by the next time I show up to do this show, if I am doing this show. In the meantime, and this is why I want to emphasize that the tempo is we're building to a huge crescendo here, and everything is quickening. Over the weekend, NATO forces, led by the U.S., staged helicopter gunship raids on military outposts well inside the Pakistani border from Afghanistan, and killed 23 Pakistani soldiers. You won't be hearing it tonight, but I can tell you that Pakistan is absolutely gripped with rage over this. It has cut off the NATO supply routes from places like Kandahar, wherever they're bringing supplies in, to ISAF forces in Afghanistan. And that reminds me of a Time magazine issue that came up this week. I saw it on Facebook. Last week's issue of Time, for the whole world, with the Asian edition, the European edition, you know, the Africa, all of those editions, the cover was a picture of a very, very bloody street fighter in Cairo, Egypt, you know, where lots of people have been being killed lately. But in the United States, the Time magazine cover was this glowy, cartoony feature article saying, why anxiety is good for you. I kid you not. So So when I say that Pakistan is absolutely enraged over this and you need to pay attention to it, trust me on that. It's just one of a great many catastrophes that are getting more catastrophic even as we speak. On a lighter collapsing note, Indonesia's Golden Gate collapsed. It just fell down. It's a 10-year-old bridge. It killed a whole bunch of people. This is what collapse looked like. But it's the British general strike that really, really has me paying very close attention to what's going to be happening this week, because the EU is definitely toast. It's obvious. We have clear signals, and we've been bringing you the stories on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, saying, you know, showing the contingency planning that's taking place for massive civil unrest and chaos in Europe throughout this next week, or the week thereafter. But it's totally over, and everybody knows it, and it's here. And again, I see some amazing synchronicity in the timing between events in Europe, between events in Pakistan, between events here with Occupy. It's almost like the powers that be had a timetable to shut down the major Occupy encampments because ... was coming next. And it's the ... we don't know exactly what it is yet, but that's apparently what's coming next week, because there was a big rush to get all this done. And again, I just hope L.A. goes peacefully tonight. Before we get to the break, we've got some emails coming in. We got a lot more things to talk about in terms of this briefing that I want to give you guys tonight. But right before we go to the break here, we've also seen, with regard to Syria, the signs of what I would call World War III breaking out. This is not chaff. This is not a distraction. We have plans to impose a no-fly zone, which is what we did right over Libya. A U.S. carrier battle group has been stationed off the Syrian coast in the Mediterranean, and there was an extremely surgical special operations strike killing 10 personnel at a Syrian Air Force base, including some of their best pilots, and it was extremely well executed. And my experience tells me that only Israeli or American military intelligence infrastructure could execute a mission like that so surgically. So that's something also that we must be extremely concerned about tonight. So what I'm going to do now, as we lead up the station break on all these cheery notes, and the board operator says free fall. Okay, free fall is fine. We'll do that for the wraparound. Something I want everybody to think about when we go to break and when we come back, and I'll get to your emails then. If you want to call in, the number is 1-888-874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. We have to let go of everything, absolutely, or you can also tweet us right at PRN underscore radio. And you can always find us on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. Got that. Okay. So the idea is, now we have to learn how to let go. The Tao and Buddhism say that it's not letting go that causes us most of our pain. So we have to be prepared for a changing kaleidoscope of realities in front of us, sometimes maybe on a daily basis. But it's one of the great lines from 12-step programs which have moved around the world. The result was nil until we let go absolutely, and letting go means letting go of what you thought was real even a day ago. We'll be right back after these messages.
And bailouts are feeding bottom suckers, and your backs up against the wall again. You're the new white trash.
Get the protest mojo on here with the new white trash. Yep, newwhitetrash.com. That's me and Dougie Lewis and Andy and everybody who did that. You can go check us out and see if you like anything there. Didn't have the music, man, I'd be going crazy. We got a Twitter from Conjugo, or Conjugo, who asked, can Occupy Santa Rosa still work with their local government? And the answer is yes. Now, I'd run a story on CollapseNet earlier in the week saying that the camp had been torn down, but there are still, I drove by today, there are still about 10 tents on the lawn, and there's a little presence there, and it's established. And the permits were issued, and those were the people who decided to go along with the changed permits. You know, we had the sudden break in good faith with our city council, but permits were filled out, and the city is letting them stay, and they're still there. Now, different agendas are being followed in different places, but I think all of us who participated in Occupy Santa Rosa are very, very proud of the way it turned out. There's a number of affinity groups that are evolving out of that to evolve into other Occupy activities, but there is still an Occupy Santa Rosa camp, and it's still there as of today. That could all change tomorrow. We have a caller, George from Connecticut. Are you there?
Yes, I was aware that there was something on the web about there was a coordinated shutdown of the Occupy movement. I can't remember the mayor's name, but she's the mayor of Oakland.
Kwan.
And she mentioned that I think 16 cities or something like that were coordinated. So there's obviously really afraid that a real momentum will start. I think this is probably in relationship to also this new bill that's coming through. Basically, they want to be able to use the military to basically snatch people and put them in indefinite detention, even in the U.S. That's coming up for the vote this week. I don't know what's wrong with these people. You know, it seems like we're redoing the whole thing that we did with the British and why we broke away from the British, all the abuses and the creeping fascism, exactly why we broke off with them.
I don't think it's creeping anymore, brother. I think it's doing a 100-yard dash right now. You know, there was, and I wrote about this on CollapseNet the day it came out. That's probably more than a week ago now, that there was a coordinated conference call with Mayor Gene Kwan and I think 18 mayors, coordinated, run by Department of Homeland Security. And what made me really what I got immediately was that since the Patriot Act, with all the money that's been poured into local law enforcement through the Patriot Act, the federal government is now into every local police department's communications, its records, everything. And there are aid programs which, you know, DHS or whoever administers them can yank in a heartbeat. And, you know, there's 100 ways in which the cities are being yanked by a fascist occupying federal government right now. And there is distinct coordination. And again, the synchronization for me indicates that they had a real rush to accomplish a lot of this before something else happened. And that's this week, I think.
Yes.
So anyway, yes. George, thanks
and
for calling
bill,
in. Yeah.
The bill I was talking about, it was something or other, 1867.
1867, yeah. I talked about that at the start of the show.
Yeah.
And why is it the ACLU tells us about it? Why doesn't our supposedly free media, which is charged with protecting our rights, advise us that there's a bill to invalidate the Constitution and the Magna Carta that's been drafted in secret that's going to be voted on?
Well, it's obvious that they're completely bought off. I mean, I've known this for decades, and I've been telling this to people, and everybody looks at me with cross-eyed when I keep mentioning things, but I've, you know, seen a lot from outside the country, and, you know, a lot of people are like the frogs in the pan that slowly put up the heat and they don't see it. But when you're outside the country for a while and you come in, you can see the dramatic changes.
Yeah.
And also you see a diversified press that's not this propaganda, one message. I mean, come on. You look at a news program and they have the same news spot on every channel.
It's awful.
I never saw this in Soviet Russia or communist China when I was there, or even other fascist-type countries.
Well, what's happening now is that this next week is the week in which most of the frogs realized that they've already been cooked to death. We've got to move on to some other questions,
okay.
But thank you for
all
calling,
right.
Man.
Okay.
D. Toro writes in, and Dan writes in, this is an excellent question. Are we seeing what Gary Null would refer to as the two cells, conditioned and authentic, as it applies to our military, being put on our streets after coming back from a war front? Will their conditioning and torturing foreign civilians be any different than at home? Or will their authentic self kick in and say, enough is enough? We know this bill is meant to put our military on our streets, with most likely some foreign troops, too. Well, I don't know about the foreign troops. I'm not so sure about that. However, Gary's description is essentially accurate, although I don't refer to it in those kind of cut-and-dried terms. As most of you know, since Occupy started, I have done a video addressing all police officers based upon my experience of what being a warrior and what honor is about, and we have a great many other shining great examples out that, you know, we have Shamar Thomas, Marine Corps Sergeant, we have Captain Ray Kelly from Philadelphia Police Department, and boy, he was just, he's been just a champ. I love that guy. I'd work with him anywhere out there. And what's clear, and this, and I saw this firsthand in Santa Rosa when we marched, now I guess it's maybe a month ago, when they were going to tear the camp down that night, and we showed up, and there was a last-minute back down. And this was right after Oakland, and the Santa Rosa chief of police, Chief Schwedhelm, had said, you know, we will clear the camp by Saturday using any force necessary. So, you know, there was a line drawn in the sand, but there was a large contingent of Veterans for Peace and other veterans there. Who showed up, all with the same mind, and I was a police veteran, and we were all going to get out in front and take the blows first. And so this is ripping many souls apart. I don't see it as a, you know, there weren't enough jagged edges in Gary's description. This is like being ripped in two. But trust me, the Occupy movement and the actions of especially Shamar Thomas and Captain Kelly have done so much to stir an internal debate. And this may have forced the hand of the powers that be to move more quickly. Let me just digress for a second. We've got three more emails, but this is a really important point. One of my biggest mentors, the biggest mentors of my life, most important, was a retired Chief Warrant Officer 4 named Bill McCoy. That's the way he talked. This is McCoy, of Army Criminal Investigation Division. And he handled, like, the most sensitive, stinky cases that the Army had. And he was just a great guy. He taught me a lot. In 94, 95, when I was living back in Washington, and I made good friends with him before he passed. And one of his favorite lines was, don't shoot unless you get a headshot. But under Bill's tutelage, I saw that when you're fighting something like we are fighting the infinite growth monetary paradigm, and we hope to find the people who are at the highest levels pulling the strings, because we do not remember it, we do not forget. What you need to do when you're fighting something that big is what you need to do is make it alter its timetable. You need to make it alter its plan of battle. And what I really believe in my gut, because I've seen, you know, the many responses I've had to my video, but I've seen the global response to Ray Kelly and Shamar Thomas and to the horrible the wounds that were inflicted on Scott Olson and Kayvon Sabegi, you know, a ranger, and I believe Olson was shot accidentally. But I believe that that did something inside the organization, the apparatus that the powers that be use to control us. And again, once the fraud, to quote Orwell, once the fraud is discovered, only force remains. And I really felt that there were some strong ripples passing through law enforcement and military ranks. So I do not believe it will be a done deal that the U.S. military will show up back here. And I do not believe that their quote-unquote conditioning in battle is going to make them unthinking automatons to do the same thing here. I give soldiers, Marines, sailors, and airmen a lot more credit than that. And again, here's where we have to be grateful to Occupy. Occupy established a clear precedent that within the United States has established, I'm not going to do a postmortem yet, that there is a huge body of people here who are legitimately and righteously fed up and pissed off, and they are nonviolent. They are no threat. They are, we are, the people that those military personnel swore to protect and defend against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So I do not think that the U.S. government next week or the week after is going to be able to roll troops on the streets and expect them to perform like they have compelled or that paid off the white shirts in New York to behave. Because I have watched through the evolution of Occupy that police departments have really done some soul searching and tried to come the extra mile and do good police work. And again, I have to salute the solution, even though it, you know, doesn't apply now, that Chief Beck and LAPD and Jim Lafferty came up with. We've got some more emails here. Let's go see what Ellen. Oh, she's sending me another song. Hi, Ellen. This is Ellen Rainwalker, who writes in almost every week. McConnell was great tonight. From Justin DeArmond, I heard some economists, including Gerard Salente, what do you think of him, by the way, blah, 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 that the U.S. economy will be propped up until after the Christmas holiday so they can squeeze the last little bit of cash from the masses, and then after the first of the year, the crash will happen. Do you agree with that? What are your thoughts on what will happen? Also, aren't the videos of the people fighting over the $2 waffle makers insightful? What will happen when they are fighting over the last loaf of bread? Thank you for everything that you do, Mike. The spirit of Mother Earth is with you, and all of us, and I and others are listening with all ears. Well, thank you very much for that. Yeah, I know Salente. He's okay. He doesn't appear a lot on the Collapse Net pages. And it's not that I'm picking on him or anything like that. I've never understood him to grasp peak oil or the essence of collapse, but that analysis is pretty good, and it's certainly matching with events right now. You know, Europe has 10 days, though. Remember that. And so we're probably going to see this before Christmas or before the end of the year. I don't see how they can keep this walking, stinking, rotten corpse walking even through the end of December. Okay, we have an email from Cameron Cadence. Cameron Cadence. I called last week. It's now obvious that the powers that be have no heart. Caps, no heart, yes. Considering the fact that there is now a nationwide coordinated effort to shut down the occupation, silence journalists, and sweep up activists, and collapse is happening, why not tell people, urge people, warn them to arm themselves? Without doing that, are we not just sending lambs to the slaughter? Struggle on. Well, you know, I was a cop, and I've been around guns, and I know a little bit about fighting and things like that. And there's a part of me that said, maybe if anybody who was inclined to get a gun hasn't gotten one by now and learned how to use it, trained themselves, become proficient with it, competent with it, and safe with it, it may be too late. And probably the last thing in the world I want now is a bunch of people who have never owned a gun in their life and never been trained with one going out and buying guns. If you've missed what's here and what's coming, you know, maybe that's a Darwinian point. You know, where I am with that is I'm very clear. I will, in the public life and at protests and as far as supporting the people, I will remain nonviolent to the last drop of blood in my body. I do own weapons, but that's because if I am attacked here, either by a criminal trying to invade my property or somebody trying to steal what I have, or by federal agents seeking to put me in jail and shut down this radio show, that might be a different story. I don't know. we all have to do our own dance with this, but the time to say go out and get a gun was quite a while ago. We've got some other items of news that I want to paint in this picture for you for the last few minutes of this show tonight, because this briefing was really very important tonight. I talked a little bit about having been in a 12-step program for 21 years. I don't need to name the program. But I owe my most profound survival skills to what I learned in 12-step for 21 years. And I also, it opened up enormous spiritual universes to me. But that point about the result was nil until we let go absolutely is so important. The Tao essentially is the path of fluidity and bending. And as I was driving around today thinking about the show, it was very clear to me that, you know, I have to let out of my head any effort to try to maintain the status quo that existed vis-a-vis Occupy or the world last week. They're just going to change that fast. And where we are most assuredly this next week is like a whole new world. Now, mixing into that, it's time we talked about Mother Earth for just a minute or two. It kind of is all about her because she is in charge, and brother, she does rule. Consider some headlines that ran by on the World News Desk this week. The Arctic sea ice loss is unprecedented in the past 1,450 years. It is accelerating rapidly. We are entering climate collapse. I'm tired of superlatives. You know, she's in charge. Snowless Scandinavians wonder where's winter. There's no snow in Scandinavia this winter. That's a clue that something's wrong. And in Texas and Oklahoma, drought has killed thousands of Christmas trees, but it's killing, I said that was poetic, and it kind of is. But it's also killing livestock, crops. Oklahoma was just fried this year. And climate change is raging on around us with massive instability. And so it's only a matter of time before the next Fukushima or the next Fort Calhoun going on. So this is almost at a point where letting go absolutely means letting go of the last second. And as I was meditating on that today, a line came to me from Jack London, who said, "I have never seen a wild thing feel sorry for itself." And that's because a wild animal, like dogs, are a perfect example. You know, dog loses a leg, you know, and sorry, back up, he feels better, his tongue's hanging out, he's happy, he wants to play, just like he never even had a leg. And that's because animals have a much greater ability to live solely in the now than we humans do. And it is an art that we need to practice, and we're going to need to keep very close in front of us throughout the course of whatever challenges come to hit us this next week. I caught this from the Wall Street Examiner today. This was probably one of the scariest things that I've seen all week. New York Fed issues mea culpa that nobody saw at 6 p.m. on Black Friday, November 25th, 2011, by Lee Adler. This is the Wall Street Examiner. In a report released on Black Friday around 6 p.m. when nobody is around, let alone paying attention, except for crazy people like me, the New York Fed posted a mea culpa on just how lousy its economic forecasts have been, a function which I had already performed over a year ago. The Fed, clueless, delusional, or both? That's what he wrote. The author of the report stated the crux of the failure thusly. And you read this, and it is like the Federal Reserve Bank admitting to the fact that they're complete idiots, that all of their prognostications have failed, that all of their remedies have failed, that all of their analyses about what trends were going in what direction have failed. And you know what that tells me, ladies and gentlemen? The Fed don't give a flying anymore. The end is near. Trust me, I've never heard the Fed do that. That'll be on the World News Desk tomorrow at CollapseNet. And in the meantime, it collapsed. And I want to thank you all again. About 2 weeks ago, I made a video for all of our members at CollapseNet, describing how difficult it is to operate in this rapidly. You can't make plans on a rolling deck that's covered with sand. And we've been giving away a lot of free memberships. We had lost 1,500 members because they could no longer afford to pay, like Netflix lost 800,000. So we asked for them to send in what they thought we were worth, and we had a very good response from that. We're going to be able to pay some big tax bills because I just cannot afford to let the Fed shut us down now. And believe me, they'd love to for just that reason. So we've got we're trying to change the way we do things, but we have to evolve step by step. But I want to speak for everyone at CollapseNet, from Wes Miller, our chief operating officer, to Luis Mora, our operations manager, Max, my assistant, John Barnes, our supervising editor, Rice Farmer, Jenna Orkin, everybody who makes CollapseNet work. It's like we're all burning ourselves out for you. We're all working real hard. I've now gone 3 months without a day off, and I'm actually taking most of a day tomorrow just to get my stuff together, because I can pretty much guarantee you that next week is going to be an ass kicker. And we look for it from whatever directions. For you CollapseNet members out, I'll be doing a members only probably emergency action alert sometime Tuesday or perhaps Wednesday at latest, as events dictate. Keep your antenna out. And now is the time when you can just go back and look at all of the things that I and CollapseNet have been recommending that you do over the course of the last year and a half, and all the things that we've tried to put there for you to help you do that. Go to your checklist now. Run down all of them. Make sure you got what you need. You can expect anything this next coming week. And that's why we call this the Lifeboat Hour, I guess, because we hope that you've all got your lifeboats built enough to carry your weight and to keep you going for a while, and hopefully that they're stocked with just some really outrageously wonderful people. And that's the best part. I'll end on a cheery note with that tonight. Over the course of the last 2 or 3 months, I have met some of the most wonderful people I've met in my entire life. I don't know which cliche you want to pick to go with that. The cream rises to the top. Necessity is the mother of invention, but there's a line from Starman, starring Jeff Bridges. It's an old movie from a long time ago, where Jeff Bridges, who was an alien, looked at a beautiful woman and he said, "You human beings are at your best when things are worst." Well, that's certainly true for post-petroleum humans, and I'm so glad there are so many of us listening tonight. And spirit willing and the river don't rise, I'll be back next week on the Lifeboat Hour. Until then, stay low and stay dry. Good night.